Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, it's Mark from Guitar Nerds here, bringing you a quick, informative hello and about Patreon, some information about Patreon. Patreon.com/guitar nerds, where you can get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds audio every week from as little as $5 a month. This week on the Patreon episode, we talk about quite a lot of stuff, actually. We talk about maybe playing guitar for 24 hours, Joe Branton shirtless, covered in blood and screaming. We talk about Marshall beers being brewed in France. Great guitars for $600 to $700, and a load of other stuff as well. So patreon.com/guitar nerds. Sign up, make us happy, make yourself happy, and let's all have a good time. Cheers. Hello everyone and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Joe Branton.
Hola.
Hopefully we are live and direct, coming to you on youtube.com/guitar nerds videos.
Hooray.
If you're watching us on there, hello, do get involved in the chat. Jay's going to be hanging out in there answering your questions and carrying your messages over from there onto the podcast. If you're listening to the audio version, thanks very much for joining us. If you want to get involved in this podcast, as you know, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Loads to talk about this week. I feel like I haven't not seen you guys for ages. We spent all of, Friday night and Saturday doing Guitar Nerd stuff.
Yeah, that was long.
Matt Knight, you even came down.
I did. It was joy. It was pure joy for a weekend.
Was it pure joy?
You people.
Was it actually awful?
No, it was great, actually. It was very tiring. I mean, we did a lot of videos. We tried a lot of stuff.
We did.
Playing guitar all day when you're in front of a camera can be ridiculously draining.
Yes. I can't believe how much we got done, actually.
I was thinking about this. We did...
We packed too much in.
12 pedal demos?
Yeah.
Four amp demos and a guitar demo.
Yeah.
Which is...
Too much.
Insane. In one
too much, some might say.
Too much. Well, at least none of you boys have got to go and edit it.
Well, I know, at least.
Yeah, that's down to me. So some of that stuff started going live today with the Boss CP1X compressor, which you may have seen on...
Oh my God, that sounded brilliant.
It did sound really good, really good. And, you know, we don't like to blow smoke up Matt's proverbial, but the Boss CP1X is a good sounding compressor. Let's leave it at that. Go and check out the video for yourselves. It's up on the YouTube channel now.
I think I understand a bit more about it now after Matt sort of explained it in the video demo.
Yeah. Because
it's not really a compressor, not in the traditional sense. And it's not even... I understand now that it's not even a compressor in the sense of multiband. It's kind of a... The MDP makes it something totally different. It's a harmonic compressor.
Yeah, it's doing some clever stuff to get some
different effects. It's blooming clever, and it's well good.
Let's not start off this podcast by servicing Matt's ego anymore. Matt, apart from the CP1X, what were your highlights from the day?
Highlights for the day, because I put something on Facebook, and when I was on the train home the next day, I was sort of like, I think my highlights had to be pedal-wise, the Echoline Roadrunner. I know we talked about it when we came back from the South of England guitar show, but I thought that sounded absolutely amazing. I actually, the more I thought about it, the Greenchild G777.
Yes,
the
that was mine.
Demo of
that
the day.
Was brilliant.
Definitely.
That sounded great.
It sounded really nice. So, 2-channel overdrive doesn't really sound like anything else I kind of plugged in before. I think they, 18 decibels of clean boost.
And it sounds like, it as well. Those 18 decibels are massive.
I had never heard of Green Child before we got in touch with them and said, like, you know, do you want to get involved with Guitar Nerds and do you want to send us a pedal to review and to demo? It was a bit of a kind of standout, really. Like, it totally comes out of nowhere.
Because we did loads of brands and lots of them were drives that day. And yeah. I think for that, I know Matt's talking about the Echo Line as well, and that was very good. The Echo Line, for me, it had its negative points in that it was really deep. It's sort of really tall pedal.
It was really big,
so it was kind of, because it was so tall, I was kind of like, I don't know how this is ever going to fit on a board, because you're not going to be able to get to the pedals either side of it or above it if there are any. It was a pedal that hadn't taken pedal boards into consideration.
I think that would be a standout pedal on a pedal board where you don't have too much other stuff in it.
Well, that's what I mean. I think it's a bit of an old boys pedal, like as in people who have a pedal.
I see what you mean. Just one make good or a box.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that could work for that. But someone's got, let's say, like whatever used to be called pedal train nano, I guess, or the like small travel.
There's
ones.
No way it'll fit on a nano. It's too tall.
It's only
too long.
No,
whatever.
It's only one.
I think width wise, I don't think it's much wider than like a standard Boss pedal or anything like that. It's not like a double pedal, is it?
It's quite. No. I guess the downside of trying to fit it onto a pedal is that it's quite deep.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Like from front long.
I suppose
we've got to work out what the dimensions
are. Long rather than high.
Yeah.
I mean, it is quite high as well, but that's why I think it would, you know, wouldn't fit on most people's kind of big pedal boards, but it would definitely fit on like a nano.
Yeah, I would say it's a Pete Cornish pedal, shrunk in the wash.
Yeah, that is that what sort of it is. Totally, totally.
But that's why I love that Green Child so much, because it was just something totally different. We said it when you were demoing it, but I kind of wish they hadn't made it green, because when it's a drive and it's green, just like Matt said when we filmed you think Tube Screamer
immediately.
It has nothing to do with it. It's so its own thing. It was brilliant, though. I can't wait for that video demo to come out, because I think that's one all our listeners should check out as well, just as a totally unique.
For those who don't know, I guess we should probably explain what the Green Child G777 is. It's a two-channel drive boost, I guess? Boost/drive?
I mean, they put it down as two isolated drive channels.
Yeah,
but with some
mechanically
really
isolated drive channels.
With some really interesting EQ shifts as well.
Yeah, and so they call it, what do they call it? Topology.
Yeah.
So the controls are kind of a little bit different to what you'd normally expect.
They had a tilt function, didn't they? Which was something that you don't normally see outside of bass sort of terminology.
Yeah, so channel one's like drive, mid and tilt, and then tilt actually in the middle position is neutral, but then all one way gives you one sort of frequency and then all the other way does something different. So it's not like an overall tone sweep. It's like either bass and
it tilts
treble.
A band, doesn't it? Which it tilts the full range, which is great, which is a really interesting and useful control.
Definitely.
And one thing, actually, I was just having a look at here, so we made sure we got the facts right. One thing I didn't mention, I don't know if this is mentioned in the manual, but they say that the headroom internally is boosted to 30 volts.
Okay.
9 volts.
Which is probably why
it sounded so open.
Yeah, that's totally what I was going to say. It's like, compared to other drives, I think, and even, you know, the ones that we really like, things like the Marvel drive and things that are, I don't know, just, you know, high-end boutique-y drives that we've talked about in the past, they always do sound quite, like, focused and quite narrow-sounding, and that's fine if that's what you're going for. But, yeah, the Green Child had a really different sound. Like you say, like, super open, never sounded kind of congested.
You could always hear the guitar signal coming through.
Definitely, and had a real kind of, like, chime. Like, I think if someone was saying to me, like, oh, I've got, like, a almost like an indie band, and I've got quite a lot of, I need quite a lot of sparkle still, but I use drive, that G777 would actually be a way that I might point them, because it's got a little bit of that kind of jangle still to it, but there's a load of different drive sounds in there as well. It's a real neat pedal.
Does anyone remember
that's
what
the only pedal they make at the moment as well?
Does anyone remember
is
the
it?
Price band that it was coming in at?
They are $225.
No, so it's not a cheap pedal, but I have to say, we must have. Wait, how many pedals did we have out? Because there were some
13
we didn't
or
demo.
Something.
Yeah, there was a lot, and out of everything from all the brands that we were looking at, it was probably the best built or at least one of them. Like
I think the Echo Line is up there.
The Echo Line's definitely up there, but in a very different way.
I'd say that was probably the best built in a way.
Yeah,
I think with things like that, obviously, and with the Green Child as well, is that if you go on the internet and have a look at them, you'll see the boxes aren't like off the shelf, like Hammond style casing.
No,
I think it's quite easy for someone to buy a standard MXR size box, for example, and drill 3 or 4 holes in it and build their circuit around that. And when, especially with the Green Child, they say they've kind of designed it from the ground up. So they've kind of gone, all right, how do you make a distortion circuit, and then what can we do to make it our own, rather than let's take this Tube Screamer circuit or let's take this space and modify it. It's like, let's start from the beginning.
You're right. So much stuff is retrospective now in the pedal front.
It's just easy, isn't it? Because, you know, people know what they're buying. If you go, right, I'm a boutique pedal builder, I'm doing a really nice Tube Screamer clone that's a real nice build and stuff, like, yeah, it's fine, you can build it as well as you want.
And clone is the word, isn't it?
Well, but it is a clone, whereas the Green Child is the first thing for a long time that I found that isn't going for amp in a box and isn't going for a clone of another pedal. It's the first genuinely kind of unique sounding pedal that I've heard for ages in terms of drive stuff. Something totally different, so highly recommended. Jay Cross, I know you're busy in the chat, but what kind of jumped out at you as being a pedal or product that we demoed this weekend that you thought was particularly standout?
For me, there was two real standouts, and that was the Echo Line, which I just think is an absolutely astonishing pedal. I think the big thing for me was when Matt said, we sort of spent a little bit of time with it, and then Matt said, oh look, it says here, if you turn the gain to zero, it just acts as a clean boost.
Yeah.
And I think we all went, okay, well, whatever.
Because pedals never work like that.
No,
they say like,
they never work like that.
Well, even clean boost. Clean boost that claim to be clean boost. Like, we talk all the time about the spark boost.
Yeah, absolutely, which is ridiculous. And I sort of don't, I've never really been sure if there's actually such a thing as a clean boost, because, you know, inherently what you're doing is you're taking that signal and you're driving it in order to get more output from it. So is there such a thing as a clean boost? So as soon as it said, like, oh, you know, get a clean boost by turning the gain down and then just turning the volume up, we were like, yeah, all right, well, let's see what happens. And it was absolutely phenomenal. It was just a clean boost.
How many decibels of clean boost did we say on that one?
I can't remember. I don't know if they actually specifically state on the Roadrunner if it's like a certain amount of decibels. They definitely did on the Green Child, but I think on the Roadrunner it's just like, if you turn the gain down and the volume all the way up, it's basically just nothing but volume boost.
I thought that was really, really cool. The other thing that I just fell in love with, and I think we're all a little bit,
I think I know what you're going to
say.
We're
all a little bit, we've all sort of fallen in love a little bit, is the Honey Boy 5 watt.
Now, we should talk about nothing but this amplifier for the rest of this podcast.
Absolutely. Well, really.
I feel that since the guitar show that we went to, these episodes have been nothing but praise for the Honey Boy.
Absolutely.
So I'd imagine our listeners might be getting a little sick of it. There's a Honey Boy coaster Jay's holding up to the camera.
In with the amp. I've been thinking about it a lot recently. This could very easily be, it could very easily seem as though we've like got some under the radar sponsorship or something. Like maybe Andy from Honey Boy has been like, well look, I'll send you
some coasters.
I'll bung you a little bit.
Here go, lads, here's some coasters.
But I'm so blown away by everything about that amp. The fact that it sounds as good as it does. It's handmade in the UK. It's super cheap.
It's highly customizable.
It's pink. That the one that we've got is pink.
Not just pink. Pink neon crocodile skin.
That's what we didn't mention last week, is that it's kind of glitter in the pink as well.
It's just an absolutely astonishing amp, and hearing it properly like that was just so wonderful.
But it's just the fact that you can get, I mean, that one, we had a really nice sort of rectangular weave, grey,
just like sort of grill.
Fendery grill on the pink neon crocodile. But the fact is, you could get anything you want, and that amplifier will still be £695.
I just realised the name of this episode is going to be Pink Neon Crocodile, because that is...
excellent, excellent. But yeah, it was absolutely amazing. And of course, Honey Boy, they have a giggable 18-watt amp for under £1,000 as
Matt,
well,
what do you think about the kind of volume and stuff on the 5-watt now that we've actually, because when we heard it, we only heard it briefly, I think, at the guitar show, didn't we? We just heard, I've heard some demos online. So what do you think now that we actually got it into a practice room and cranked it up a bit?
I thought it sounded amazing, and you know, when the demo, I think, are we putting the demo out this week? Because I know a lot
I'm
of people
try.
On Facebook
Friday.
Are desperate to see it.
I think Friday.
We demoed it with my Les Paul, so like PAF pickup, so slightly sort of underpowered, quite dark sounding.
Yeah.
And people going, oh, how is it for clean headroom? How would it take pedals? And I was like, I don't think it's the amp for that. Like, I think it's probably the amp for maybe one overdrive pedal, like a boost.
Yep.
But I think as soon as you start kind of trying to think about delays and reverbs, once you're into sort of crunchy territory, I think they're just going to sound a bit too muddy.
The way that I was talking to one of the listeners on Facebook about it, who's thinking about picking one up, and what I was saying, maybe like 1 to 4 or 1 to 5, it sounds pretty clean. So I think if you were using it for home and you wanted to like use your pedals there, that would be perfectly fine. But I think if you're thinking about taking out and gigging it with a load of pedals, you might struggle.
Yeah, I think so. I just it's not the amp for that. It doesn't have the kind of headroom, I think, for that kind of setup.
No.
And I thought that the nice thing was it was just so rich and dynamic to the way you play the guitar that it's just one of those amps that's just fun to play.
Yeah.
Like, it's rare that now that you kind of get an amp that's so minimal but still so enjoyable.
I mean,
you know, you don't have to really dial anything in. I don't think we really even touched the tone control. I think we pretty much just set the volume for either a clean sound or a distorted sound and just use the guitar for everything else.
I think totally their market is people who, you know, want something. I mean, for me, it's better than something like a Fender Pro Junior. Obviously, it's lacking some features of the Blues Junior, in that it doesn't have, you know, like a switchable boost and doesn't have reverb in there. But if you were looking for something around the price of a Blues Junior, but you want all the customizable options, and for me, if you want something that sounds a little bit better driven, like, I find that the Fender stuff is great clean and probably stays a bit cleaner, like louder, but doesn't break up as nice as the Honey Boy. Yeah. The Honey Boy is like a proper rock and roll amp.
I think I'd be interested to hear the 18, because with the 18, what that they do, they have a master volume option.
Right.
So if you still want the kind of classic driven set at home, you've got the option of driving the preamp and then, you know, obviously controlling the output with master volume.
Yeah.
But if you want it a bit more open and you want the same sound louder for gigs, you've got the master volume on there as well.
Yeah, yeah. Joe Branton.
Yeah.
What jumped out at you?
Well, yeah. I guess those were really the ones. I mean, the other, another sort of notable, I mean, obviously, I guess the Honey Boy is very clear, and I think, yeah, the Echo Line and the Green Child really stood out as pedals, as drive pedals. The Pulp and Peel.
Yes.
By JHS.
Yes.
It's a compressor that works equally as well on guitar as it does bass. That I was really impressed with.
We didn't realise, or we didn't talk about it last week, because we talked about the Pulp and Peel, I think, briefly, because I'd tried it briefly.
Yeah.
It's got a balanced line out for bass. So if you want to just go straight from that into like a desk, I guess, you could use it as your DI box.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
And little bit of drive on there.
Yeah, really good. Actually, a really versatile sounding drive. I like sounding compressors, right? And I like it when compressors have... offer a little bit more than just compression, like a little bit of tone shaping as well. And I thought the Pulp and Peel did that.
Yeah, so control-wise on there, so you've got mix, because you also get like a total pass-through, don't you? And you just blend in the compression sound.
Which is very useful for bass players, especially.
Indeed. And there's volume and ratio and then tone, I think. Is that the other one, Matt?
Yes, I think it was, tone, volume, tack. I can't remember now. Because there's a distortion circuit on the side as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
There is, of course.
You've got a gain control on the side.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a switch on the front of it that turns the drive on and off, but there's also like a little micro thing that you need to get a screwdriver in to adjust the amount of drive as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. I thought that was a really good, interesting, versatile compressor.
Definitely.
In a sort of, especially when we'd just done the CP1X, which I kind of thought, I was like, oh, well, this is kind of trumped compression for the moment. But, but it was...
very different. CP1X is, for me, is quite clean. And as we talked about, kind of gives you that kind of overall response through the MDP technology.
I would say it is like CP1X gives you like... polished record sheen, like if you're going to run a mix through a compressor, that adds, but the Pulp and Peel adds like what feels like analog warmth to a guitar signal if you actually want a compression sound.
Yeah,
it's absolutely. It's the difference between, you know, the CP1X is a little bit more like a studio compressor on the floor, whereas the Pulp and Peel is like old school.
Yeah, it's a proper rock like, and roll compressor.
Yeah, just a bit of kind of like, it's got a bit of vintage grime to it. Yeah, I like it a lot.
But there was one other thing, actually, as well. Whilst I haven't sort of sung their praises as much as maybe some of you guys have, I was really impressed with, if not at all, the look, the build quality of the Reverend Billy Corgan that we got in. I was very impressed with the fretwork, the attention to detail, the hardware.
Oh, it just blew me away.
Matt wants to buy one.
It sounded great. The pickups were brilliant.
I actually think I might buy one.
Really?
The pickups were Billy Corgan's signature pickups as well, but they're
rail
not
hammers.
Rail hammers, yeah.
Which aren't, they're not Reverend, but they're exclusively in that guitar, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the brand?
I believe so, yeah. Maybe we should double check.
Rail hammer is the brand.
Oh, right,
and
okay.
They make some Billy Corgan pickups.
Yeah. And they're half-bladed humbucker.
It's like half P90, half humbucker.
And it's a bladed humbucker for your low three strings, and your high three are P90 pots.
Yes, I think it's that way around.
Poles,
right. Yeah. Interesting guitar. I think it's kind of split us on like the looks and stuff, because you two, I think, don't really like it.
Oh, it was silver burst with an aluminium scratch plate, which doesn't really.
You love the silver burst.
I can't stand silver burst guitars. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of sunburst in general, which I realise is
described the Silverburst as the worst of the sunbursts.
Yeah, it is the worst of the sunbursts.
That's unbelievable.
It is the worst colour of the worst.
I have to disagree.
What about a nice like 70s Les Paul in Silverburst? Absolutely. Like
aged Silverburst.
No.
When they start to go green.
Dreadful.
No such thing as aged Silverburst. Yeah, anyone who bought a Silverburst guitar got it refinished.
No,
it goes green.
Yeah,
it goes green.
What? It starts to look more like Antigua, which is a
grey colour.
Yes.
However, they do it in other colours. They do it in pearl white, metallic alpine, and purple burst.
I really like their metallic alpine. It's kind of like a worn seafoam green.
They definitely looked on the shelf and they were like, right, we've got to send one to these idiots down in Brighton. What's the least popular colour? Which one can't we shift? Oh no, that one looks really nice. That one's really cool. That one, you know what? Silverburst. Those mugs were like that.
No, they said, what is the coolest?
Do you think if I contact them and said, look, we did a really wicked video, will you make one in pink for me? They do it.
They seem quite open to doing stuff. So
pink burst.
They probably won't, I'd imagine, but
I think it's probably a fairly robust setup costs.
Yeah,
for dropping some pink in the
go down to Halfords, get a can of spray paint.
Job done, easy.
Job done.
It sort of reminded me. We've said it a few times, sort of since they came on our radar. Probably this year, really, because it was Merchant City Music that started doing them. I think I might have brought Reverend to the table because I toured with a band called Dialects at the start of this year, and they were all endorsed by Reverend guitars.
Okay.
But it could have been Matt, because shortly after that, then Matt's old shop Anderton's started stocking Reverend as well. And that's sort of as far as Reverend have got in the UK. You've got Merchant City in Scotland and Anderton's over here. But it reminded me, well, actually sort of seeing one in the flesh for the first time since touring with the guys and sort of seeing them up close, the build quality on them is remarkable. Like it makes you realise like how, especially on things like fretwork and stuff like that, how much Fender and Gibson can just get away with whatever they want because of what's written on the headstock.
Yeah, I mean, Fender and Gibson, I generally find, are pretty good. But the Reverend was awesome. The fretwork in particular was absolutely fantastic.
I just thought it just like, at points it sounded like a Tele, at other points it sounded like a Les Paul, some points it sounded like a Strat. It had that kind of like nice sort of almost out of phase sort of clicky sound to it. I was just like, this is sort of all the best guitars in one with a really nice neck on it as well.
Zero Anon on the YouTube stream has just pointed out that rail hammers are designed by Joe Naylor, who is the person behind Reverend.
Oh, right. So, okay, so it's like a sub-brand.
I guess it's like a sister company or something
okay,
like
cool.
That.
That's so, awesome. I guess that means that they gives them a chance to sell them to other people
yeah,
or sell
absolutely.
Them separately
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
That's cool.
Yes.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
So that's,
awesome.
That's neat. So keeping it in the family.
I'm going to give a shout out to the Pedal Pal FX JCM emulator, which is one that we've talked about very briefly on the podcast. The reason I'm going to give a shout out to it is because I think it's going to be a good competitor to the Marvel Drive. Like, we've talked about the Marvel Drive a lot.
Yeah.
I think they're both doing the exact same thing, and they end up with slightly different results. I think the JCM emulator is much more open-sounding, and actually a lot more how I remember JCM sounding when I've heard them in the flesh. I think the Marvel Drive sounds much more like a recorded version of, you know, the records that you expect, you associate with an 800 and stuff. And I think that the Pedal Power FX comes off as much less polished, but it's also, I think it's doing a much rawer take on that sound.
Yeah.
It's funny because they are, they're of a new generation of guitar companies with really crap names. Like
Pedal Power Effects,
Rock and Roll Relics. You know, this is stuff that like 10 years ago you'd be like, this is a company, this is a joke. This is a joke company. But they're putting out really good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like Rock and Roll
Relics.
It
really irks me that Rock and Roll Relics put out some of the best. Wait,
Rock and Roll Relics just did a signature for Billy Joe Armstrong.
What?
He's moved from Gibson to Rock and Roll Relics.
Yeah, we didn't talk about this last week actually. We should with that.
So,
how about
is he playing Friedman amps now as well by any chance?
Yes, I think he is actually.
Oh my, so everyone is actually at a point where they're playing the copies.
Yeah, I think he actually is playing Friedman amps. With that,
which is funny because he's also like covering music that, you know, he was doing well 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. With that, should we dive into some news and we can talk about that a bit further?
Nude.
This isn't on our thing, but while we're talking about it, we should talk about it. Billy Joe Armstrong is now playing, or has been seen to be playing, a Rock and Roll Relics Les Paul Jr. with a black American flag on it. It looks awesome.
I'm not into it.
That looks so good.
That doesn't sound awesome. Anything with a national flag on it is not cool.
Yeah, but it's like a sort of backwards.
No, it doesn't matter. It's not cool.
I think it is cool. I think it is super cool. We talked about Rock and Roll Relics in the past. Joe, you did a little brand of the week, I believe.
Yeah. I think we did. Did we?
We did do it. Yeah,
I did.
You did Rock and Roll Relics.
I really like Rock and Roll Relics.
Yeah, I do as well.
I really want their double cut Les Paul Jr. bass.
Totally, totally.
It's $2,500.
I've seen some in the flesh. I think I saw some at NAMM when I went there. And they look so authentic.
You can't get them over here.
No, there's no stockists for them yet.
You can.
Oh, can
what?
You? Oh, wow, okay.
You used to be able to get them at World. You used to be able to get them at World Guitars.
Okay, interesting. It's so
I was actually just having a look.
Okay, so like I said, yeah, it's one of their Les Paul Jr. copies, with a load of guff all over the front. But I think it looks awesome. And for him, you know, like, he's a bombastic fella, and it's quite a bombastic stage show. The guitar works perfectly.
All right.
You know, I'm not going to win you over.
I just don't know why Billy Joe Armstrong gets a shout out in our news, that's all.
Because he's a cool dude. Just a
tired old guy who
literally
no one buys the records of
that
anymore.
That new album is...
We're talking about, like, each record has got more popular than the last.
Oh, that latest record is one of the worst records I've ever heard.
Really?
It's so bad.
I've not listened to it.
So bad.
I just tried to find a picture of the...
He works for X Factor now, right?
I just tried to find a picture of that guitar and I can't find it. So Instagram.
It's on their Instagram.
But
yeah.
I don't think
it's not worth looking at.
Yeah, it's not very.
Oh, mate, what are you just cussing me out?
I reckon the reason he went to Rock and Roll X is because Gibson were like, I mean, I know we've made some mistakes, but that's too far.
You guys are out of order. I think, are they Bay Area maybe? Aren't they local to Green Day, Rock and Roll Relics?
I think
it's like it's through like personal connection or something that he knows about.
Right. Okay.
Following the Instagram story vaguely back in my mind, there's some sort of personal connection there.
Let's talk about some actual news.
This is news. Nice. Come on, one of the greatest guitar heroes of our generation's got a cool guy. So, first bit of news: V Boutique release the V Board Pro. Matt Knight, are you familiar with V Boutique?
I have heard of them. It's a weird one, because alongside, and I know we don't talk about it as much, but I think alongside the boutique pedal boom, there's also been a boutique pedal board explosion.
Okay.
Just brands left, right and centre coming out with pedal boards. You wouldn't have thought there could have been so many variations on what effectively is a plank of wood. But these are quite cool. I mean, they're effectively pedal train sizing, and I suppose anyone who decides to go into this is like, well, we're going up against pedal train. They make a pedal, they make pedal boards from £35 to £229 if you want a hard case. But I think these guys, along with some other brands, always aim for like a more boutique market. So these are pedal train size, but they're like, imagine like an enclosed box with a solid top.
Yep.
And then three rails drilled in for all the cables to run underneath. Fully Tolexed as well. And
which seems weird. I wouldn't really want Tolex, because it's Tolex across the front of the board, isn't it?
So surely you've got to put Velcro sort of, on
it's
the
like,
Tolex.
Yeah, it's like tread plate, like what looks like black tread plate across the front.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
Sort of design. Like, and then Tolexed front around the edges with piping. Yeah, I think the problem with that is it could tend to look messy maybe after a while. But
yeah, definitely.
It's got the nice thing that I like about these and a couple of other companies like Salvage Custom is that they hardwire the IEC and then locking jacks on either side.
Yeah,
yeah, that's cool.
So you can basically plug your whole board in underneath and then your ins and outs are just on the inside as well. And yeah, then you've just got like an input and an output on either side of your pedal board.
Yeah,
cool. Yeah, I mean, it's nice alternative, really. I just don't know whether they come with... I don't know whether they come with a bag or anything like that. But yeah, they seem like nice boards. I mean, it is difficult because you are going up against, you know, the name in the, you know, pedal train are the name in pedal boards, aren't they?
It's totally
difficult for you to kind of walk into a store and buy something that isn't a pedal train.
But I mean, pedal train themselves are a fairly new company. You know, it's only within...
No, they're not. They've been around for a long time.
Yeah.
They've been
really?
Around for a long
yeah.
time. I think the problem was is that pedal train have probably been around like 20 years.
Really?
It's just wow. that they were just incredibly difficult to get hold of in the UK for a while. And
right.
then they dropped off the radar earlier or sometime last year because I think they announced at NAMM all these new pedal boards.
Yeah.
And I think they swapped factories and they had some sort
right.
of like...
I remember that
I think they basically had a quality control issue. So they were like, well, we should put nothing in the market rather than
right.
something.
I do remember that they discontinued like everything and just
yeah,
there was nothing else available for ages.
I think part of the reason for that was because for a long time, the only two pedals you really have would be Boss pedals and MXR pedals, and they fitted the rails perfectly.
Yeah.
But with the kind of move into mini pedal board
yeah.
or mini pedals, it's like, oh, they don't fit on the rails properly. So people put them sideways, and people like me who've got OCD want all their 12 pedals to face the same way. So I think that was kind of a good move. But then that's the part of the advantage of the V board and similar pedals is that it doesn't really matter where you place them. You can place them in any order because the board, the top of it's flat. You don't have to worry about things falling down rails or anything like that. It's just kind of like you can put things exactly where you want them.
Can I just say, if you're watching the video stream, you'll see both myself and Joe Branton glancing at his laptop with slightly horrified looks on our face. It's not because he's, you know, as Joe Branton is wont to do, pulled up like a goatsy image
oh,
or
yes.
someone doing something horrific
absolutely.
Leg break or something like
yeah.
that. No. What are you looking at?
I'm looking at the new... this is new for the news. The new Daddario Humiditrack.
Crisis averted.
It's yeah. Okay, so Daddario have released a little sensor that you can put in your guitar case. Works on Bluetooth. And you can have several of them in for all your different guitars, and you can set up a little profile for those guitars. So on the app, it has a little picture of your guitar, and it will let it know, let you know on the app the temperature, humidity, and any impacts on an hourly, daily, and monthly data monitoring program. The best bit is, it will send you push notifications if dangerous conditions are detected.
Yes.
So that you can take action before damage occurs.
You know who this has been built for?
What?
This has got Dan Grace written all over
yes.
it.
Yes, podcast, but regular podcast guest, Dan Grace.
Friend of the podcast, Dan Grace. When he, little backstory with Dan, who some of you might have heard or seen, he was guest about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
We know Dan because we all used to work with him, and he, about 5 years ago, he took over as, maybe not quite 5 years ago, he took over as manager of the acoustic department at GAC, and he went on a crusade to ensure that all of the guitars were kept in the correct humidity conditions. And I honestly don't think I've ever seen... I've known Dan for probably close to 10 years now, and I've never seen him care about anything as much as he cared about ensuring the humidity on those guitars was spot on.
He loves the humidity sensor.
It was such a weird thing for him to get obsessed with. And if this existed back then...
We would have had a few of those.
Absolutely. And look, I can actually... If I was to Dario... I would be sending one of those to every guitar store in the U- in well every guitar store. I mean, Didario UK should be sending one to every guitar store in the UK. Just being like, look, you can use this, and then sell them whatever. But like, you should have this on display because, like, you know, if you live somewhere,
I don't know, man.
If you live somewhere this like, if you live somewhere like this, I you'd be surprised.
It's
that
$50.
Does okay? So Michael,
to save your like. 1950s Gibson.
From
how would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Humidity.
Humidity.
yeah, but you'd gonna know if it's somewhere hot, right?
So my question
no
on this
tours
is
a 1950s thing. So my question, we're not talking about touring conditions.
My question is, does this have GPS? Because if it does, that's not the worst thing in the world. Like, if this you put it in your guitar case,
it doesn't say anything about that.
Okay, because I don't know if we talked about it, but Jay and I went to the Westfield show, technology show, a couple of weeks ago. I think we did talk about it on the podcast last week. And Tile were there, who do GPS trackable tiles, essentially, like a tiny GPS tracker. And I thought, well, this would be perfect, because what you do is you take your scratch plate off your guitar, stick the tile underneath the scratch plate, and then if your guitar ever goes missing, gets nicked, you'll know where it is. You can GPS track it. So if this does that, if it's sat in your guitar case, I mean, obviously it's, you know, won't be such a close connection to the guitar and stuff, but generally, I guess if someone nicks a case out of the back of your van, the guitar will go with the case. This actually could be a decent product, as
if we both looked at it
and went, what is this?
No, I think this is ridiculous. $50 for something that tells you the temperature in the case.
If that has GPS on it, that is a great product.
It doesn't look like it does. Now, I went to a music industry conference a few months ago, and there was a company there that were releasing a product which was going to be that sort of thing. Because, of course, we've got it in bikes now. There are trackers you can put in seats and things like that. they had something like this. Of course, the problem you have with guitars is where you're going to put it. And this was a very small chip, but what they were suggesting was that you drill it in. And it was just like, and there it is. And there's the end of anyone caring about your product.
One under the scratch plate.
Yeah, under the scratch plate or in
you still have you'd still have to drill it under there. It's still thick enough. Sort of, it was
really because tile isn't that big at all. Really? Tile's like a tiny little square.
They look like
these look like capacitors.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Okay. No, this looks like a kind of like chip and pin style.
Right.
I don't know how the tile.
Why could you put it in the back? The cavity at the back.
Well, yeah. I guess so. I guess you could. Yeah. I mean, they were suggesting like drilling it into the.
Why would anyone do that?
Yeah.
Oh, under the control plate.
Yeah.
Like on the telly.
There's plenty of places where. Would go with tile though. Do they need to be charged or anything?
No, I don't think so. I don't really know how it works. I guess there's just like a long time battery in there.
Yeah, it's probably like it's probably like a small watch battery that probably lasts like 10 years.
Yeah. I'm kind of considering getting one because you know my P bass I would not want going anywhere. In fact, all my guitars really, but the P bass has particular sentimental value, and just sticking it under the scratch plate might be a kind of cool thing to do. I'm into it potentially.
Yeah,
I'm quite into that as well.
And
that's a stupid idea, but yeah, trackers on guitars.
No, I think the humidity controlling idea is good. I mean, you know, it's in the same way as you wouldn't leave one of your basses next to the radiator. Like,
if you did by accident, someone comes around to your house who doesn't know what it is, leaves your bass by the radiator, and then you both go out to the pub
isn't it? With humidity, like people have. I think people mainly know about damp, and they're like, oh, well, it's not damp in my house. Why should I worry? But actually, especially in the winter, the air can be really dry.
Yeah.
And when you're having the heating on, it dries out even more. And you see a lot of, I think mainly things with like unbound fretboard edges and classicals tend to be like the biggest ones.
Yeah.
Well,
classicals obviously because there's no truss rod to keep that neck in place.
Yeah, and I suppose with older guitars, they've kind of the woods moved a lot more, but a lot, especially with like fresher guitars, as it were, newer guitars, especially ones in mass production where the wood isn't necessarily treated as well before it's made into a guitar, they can be fairly prone to humidity issues.
Definitely,
and that's, I mean, it goes for anything. Like people always used to say, "Oh, I paid X amount thousands for this guitar, it shouldn't have these problems." It's like, but it's unfortunately it's still a piece of wood at the end of the day.
What you've just witnessed there is guitar nerds in action. A product that we initially thought was bloody stupid,
and we've reasoned it into thinking. I haven't.
Yeah, except for Joe, who won't listen to logical reasons.
I actually use equipment.
Gear of the Year 2016. what's it called?
That should actually go in.
The MIDI track, weirdest gear.
Yeah,
we can go into weirdest gear. Okay, yeah. Humidity tracks in.
I think the three of us should make a pact right now.
How many vetoes do we
get? It's a progressive alliance.
Zero. You get zero.
No. How many vetoes do we get?
Well, we get a couple each. You get. No.
Are we getting two each?
No, there's no veto. There's no official veto. That's not how it works.
It's just about talking stuff out. Like
we
mates.
Shouldn't talk about Gear of the Year because we got in trouble on the Facebook group for talking about it too much too early.
Yeah, you're right.
Low key.
Just
protect the business.
Sorry.
Just a quick fact. Pedal Train started in 1999.
That's there cool. we go.
Right, and you go, that's not very long. They're quite a new company. No, it was 16 years ago. 17 years ago.
Do you know what made me feel really old this week? Wave Race 64 came out 20 years ago
Are you talking about? What's that?
Wave Race 64?
It was like one of the
launch N64 games.
Yeah,
20 years ago. And Pedal Train, 1999.
Wow.
Same year as the Matrix.
You're right. Exotic Effects have announced a brand new pedal, the Soul Driven AH. Matt Knight, tell us about it.
Yes.
I thought it was R.
No,
the Soul Driven R.
It stands for Alan Hines.
Okay. Oh. Soul Driven R.
amazing guitarist Alan Hines. Awesome tone. Basically, I think he's played exotic pedals for years and they've kind of decided to give him a signature one. They've done a similar thing with other people before, and these are limited to 1,500 pieces worldwide, and they come with a certificate and a download of his like latest CD. I think they did a recent one with someone else.
That's so good. That's such a good add-on. Oh
yeah.
Brilliant. I want all signature models to come with a download card.
But the latest CD. Not a download code. They come with the latest CD.
Oh, that's so, so good.
Like Steve Vai, you don't get a copy of Passion and Warfare, you get the latest one, which is undoubtedly utter cobblers.
If I said CD, I actually meant download card, because I don't actually come with a download card.
You've ruined it.
But talking of coming with a CD, the Joe Satriani Silver Surfer did indeed come with a CD.
Yes.
Do you know what was it like recommended backing tracks or something like that?
I just remembered something. No, it was just the album. It was the album. No, I've just recommended. Remembered something. Sorry, what? English. What? I watched Moneyball last night, which is a film about baseball and statistics. And in the last game of the season, Joe Satriani's just there playing a completely mirrored JS1000 or whatever, his signature model. Just rocking out doing the national anthem on a completely mirrored Ibanez JS model.
Of course.
It's ridiculous. The most ridiculous thing. Anyway, so Matt, tell us a bit more about this pedal.
Basically designed in conjunction with Alan Hines, who's like an amazing guitarist, session guy. And it's sort of an overdrive, sort of a boost. And imagine it's based off one of their other units. Obviously, they do things like the BB preamp, the AC drive, the RC booster. And I think it's taking that sort of fundamental exotic sound and kind of just tweaking it more for sort of his playing. Four controls, gain, tone, volume, and mid boost. So the mid boost is quite nice because it adds a touch more gain in while obviously pushing and helping your guitar signal cut through. Really nice. Comes in a fancy Lake Placid blue-ish
nice.
Sort of colour.
Tidy.
More blue
it's like
pedals.
Chrome blue on the outside, but then like Lake Placid blue on the top with blue knobs and a blue LED.
Nice.
What? Sorry.
Blue LED.
All right.
All blue.
Dabba dee, dabba die.
I'm feeling blue.
No.
I'm blue.
Yeah.
I'm blue.
Yeah. But yeah, should be a really, really nice pedal. I know a couple of people who have already pre-ordered one, so
oh, cool.
Hopefully I'll get a chance to give it a go.
Nice, nice. One last bit of news this week. A company that I'd not heard of before, Studious Amplifiers. Studious.
It's a good name, isn't it?
It's a great name. Introduced a brand new amp called the Mosley. Matt, have you got the spec there?
Oh my god.
I do indeed. It's worth, if you're listening to this now and you are near a computer, it's definitely worth checking them out online. Studious Amplifiers. I've had their name crop up a few times.
This amplifier looks amazing.
Yeah. So I think he used to work for, if I remember rightly, I think he went to Emperor Amps and Cabs. So they're really famous for making like 810s and 812s. For a lot of like doom bands, they made like really heavy amplifiers, and I think he worked for them for a bit, and then he kind of branched out on his own. I think he's built amps that have been used by like Weezer and stuff like that. So the Studious, which the photo that I've seen on the press release is like a sort of wooden sleeve that's like non-Tolex with an awesome sort of, I don't know how you describe it. It almost looks like a nice grey cushion.
It looks like...
as the grill cloth.
It looks like either the greatest bit of IKEA furniture ever or like a big home radio from the early 1960s.
Yeah. It's exactly that, isn't it?
They look incredible.
It looks great. It looks like that, doesn't it? It's got quite a 60s budget furniture look to
totally,
it.
Totally, yeah.
It's the sort of thing that I wouldn't have been surprised to see a sort of Sears logo on.
Yeah, completely. And also, the logo on there is kind of like in that kind of friendly IKEA font. So it's
a really unusual, like, it's basically Arial Black.
Yes.
The font Arial Black.
Totally.
Just saying the word. There's nothing. I really hope they didn't pay for that logo. I mean, it really works.
I like it. So do we know what kind of sound we're expecting from it?
I suppose it's a bit difficult because I did a bit of research and listened to a few of the other amps, and they kind of don't really sound like anything else. It's not like, this is a Fender circuit, and you know, Honey Boy amp's great, but they've gone, oh, this is like a modified 50s Princeton. They're not.
Well, and a lot of people do that, you know.
What sort of thing is it then? Is it clean or dry? Is it especially vintage sounding?
I think they're going for like a kind of vintage. I'd say they're probably going for like a vintage 60s feel, but it's it's high and low channel inputs, single volume control, bass treble, and then that's kind of it. So I think it's just like three controls.
It's a clean amp.
But it's volume output wise, I'm not really sure because it doesn't really, in the press release that we've got, it doesn't really say much about the overall output.
So it's got two EO84s for power tubes.
So it's 84s, it could be...
It does actually say, Matty. Yeah, 16, 8 or 4 switchable output.
No, that's ohms, mate.
No, that's ohm outrating.
That's ohms. Okay.
But that is going to affect the volume.
Oh, yeah, weird. Yeah, no, yeah,
but,
okay,
but they're
I see.
Rating it in,
I would imagine...
That's the impedance, yeah.
I'd imagine 30, 40 watts, probably.
Okay.
To have that many options... on the selectable output, it would have to be...
Yeah, but that's dependent watts. On what the other speaker cab is that you plug in. Mm. Guess you won't be able to just switch it on the amp
itself.
Oh,
I thought it would be like a... No.
Okay, well, interesting. Yeah, it'd be nice...
They actually say dovetailed solid wood cabinets for durability and a mid-century modern hi-fi appearance.
It looks like
a
hi-fi.
I want that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really want it.
I want a bit of mid-century modern hi-fi.
But, after checking out their kind of website, doing a lot of research into them, definitely go and check them out there. Yeah, Studious Amplifiers. They do three different models at the moment. And yeah, they look amazing. I don't know if you can actually just buy them. I think you just have to, because I've just read on
the custom
FAQ section, you basically just have to contact them and he will build one.
There's $1,650. Dollars, US dollars.
But their cheapest one as a head is $1,200.
Okay, interesting.
I think it's amazing
for something hand built. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1/6 L6, 1 preamp valve. Does anything from jazz to shoegazy indie rock.
Nice.
So,
yeah, these are really cool.
Into that big time, big time.
Indeed.
Chaps, we've got a bit of a choice now. Uh-huh. Do we want to do Brand of the Week now, or would you want to do Brand of the Week in the Patreon episode, and we'll do a load of questions?
I think we should do questions.
I think we've neglected questions.
You're right, we have.
We've got some questions from here, but we've also got a live YouTube stream coming in. A working stream for the first time in 3 weeks or something. So, Jay, if you've got some questions lined up, that'd be awesome. Let's take one from the Facebook group first,
and then we'll
blast through that. So, okay, first up, Chris says... Has anyone had any issue? Oh, in fact, you haven't done the questions jingle.
Oh, sorry.
Jingle.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Questions.
That wasn't a jingle. I was expecting more musical.
All right, okay.
Than
that. Do you want me to do it again?
No, yeah. you've had your shot.
Questionable motives.
Also, not a jingle.
Oh.
Just sort of a bit musical.
Oh, right. You want a musical one?
Yeah.
But that's how I've always done it.
I know, but I'll just jingle it this week.
Questions.
Okay, yeah, they're perfect. Exactly what I wanted. So first up, Chris says, has anyone here had issues with string rattle being caused by a problem with the saddles or the saddle screws? I've a Fender Telecaster, and having set up everything up, I'm certain the small remaining rattling sounds are coming from the bridge with 6 saddles, maybe due to slightly loose saddle screws. Anyone had this problem before? I think it's fair to say we've probably all experienced this in one way or another.
Yes.
Joe Brenton, any thoughts?
Weird that you come to me.
I know that this actually affects bass a lot because particularly jazz basses, I think, for some reason.
Well, I mean, if it's coming from the bridge and you're playing sort of vintage styled bridges, then jazzes and P basses are affected equally because they have the same bridge.
Sure,
but I guess I get it a bit. My solution is to check if you can hear it through the amplifier, which lo and behold you won't be able to, therefore it matters not.
Okay, and what if you can hear it through the amplifier?
You won't be able to hear it through the amp.
Have you got a more sensible answer to this question?
This is sensible.
Because there is a common fix for this, and Joe's being bloody obsequious.
No, if you play your guitar loudly, it doesn't matter.
Matt Knight.
I mean, yeah, it's difficult. Cool, because sometimes I know when you're setting up a guitar you can hear those sort of things, and yes, when you do plug it in sometimes it does disappear. However, there is a quick fix, because usually it is the grub screws, and usually it's on cheaper instruments because they use grub screws that don't fit properly in the saddles.
Yes,
so you can buy something called Loctite, which is basically super glue that doesn't set, is the way that I've always kind of seen it.
Super glue that does set, but you can break it again. You can make it unset.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, it sort of sets in the sense that it's kind of
remoldable,
like
super glue.
Yeah,
but it's like, yeah, it's not like you're never gonna. I mean, because that's the thing, super glue, you always go, I really need to super glue that, and then you get the super glue and then you can't get the lid off.
Yeah. that does happen a lot. So yeah, so basically the idea would be get the Loctite and then put it essentially all round the thread of the grub screw, put the grub screw in to the point where you want it to be, and then leave it, and then it will set. Is that right?
Yeah, basically. Or to be honest, and I still think this is one of the best tonal upgrades you can do, is replace the saddles.
Yeah, something like Graf-Tech.
I mean, if you've got a
Callahan, which is the ones I've used recently, worked really well.
If you've got a six saddle bridge, there's your problem.
No, what's wrong with you?
Switch over to a three saddle bridge.
That's not always possible, is it? So,
I know.
So Graf-Tech saddles, I think, is the or Graf-Tech here in the south of England.
Yes. They're a bit soulless, though, aren't they?
No, they're not.
They are.
The look of a bridge is still quite important. It's why I have naff bridges on all my guitars.
No.
They are. Like,
I think it depends what you're going for, though.
Yeah,
really,
for sure. But they are a bit soulless looking.
I saw a Charvel with a Floyd Rose today on Facebook, and I was like, that's pretty good.
Wow.
So I'm the wrong person to be asking about whether Graf-Tech saddles ruin the look.
I think it works. You do it.
Yeah, totally. I'm all about the Graf-Tech saddles. All about it.
Never been a huge fan.
Jay Cross, should we take a question from the chat?
Yes. There was a question in here from Simon, who for Joe, I guess, really.
Oh, that's a shame.
Best lightweight bass rig.
Lightweight bass rig?
Yeah.
Okay.
You've asked the wrong person.
Yeah.
Well,
if you're not aware, he's going to go,
well, if you play your guitar quietly, then...
If you're not travelling to your gig in a big truck like my successful band...
If you don't have a van, you're basically not a band.
You're not really a band.
Go back to your mum's basement.
Right, so yes, the problem with asking me about lightweight bass rigs is I don't think that any of them sound any good.
Such a knob.
When I find one, actually, I tell you what, Dark Glass.
Okay, interesting.
Have made an amp head, and this is kind of in reaction. Dark Glass are if you don't know Dark Glass, then Dark Glass are a bass pedal manufacturer who make a couple of absolutely brilliant preamps, as well as a really good bass compressor.
They do.
Very much in competition with Sansamp, who sort of dominate the bass preamp market. And I, as this is a new release, I imagine this is in reaction to Sansamp releasing their first head this year. They released their VT bass driver preamp. They've released as a Class D solid state amp head. Sansamp actually did this with a corresponding single 12 cab, which can handle the full 500 watts of the amp head. So that is a really pucker lightweight rig. I imagine, whilst I haven't checked out the Dark Glass, go and watch some videos of it, because I think it probably is going to be slightly better, because most people are of the mind that the Dark Glass preamp on the floor is better than Sansamp on the floor. So I imagine in head form it's going to be great. That said, I think Class D, which is crucially what you need an amp head to be in order to be lightweight, is also crucially what will always make an amp head sound balls. I just don't think there's been Class D that has really been very good. I don't think Class D works.
We went and heard the, what was that Mark Bass head?
The Ninja, or no, the new one that basically
the
is
the really
Ninja,
small,
but they
tiny.
Don't call it,
it's like
yeah.
not that much bigger.
The Micro Mark.
No, that was the little combo
Nano
they did
Mark?
A little while ago. Nano. No, that was also a little combo. That
no,
they
this
did.
Is great.
I can't
guys.
Remember.
Yeah.
There's, yeah, no, yeah. There's a there is a new Mark bass head that is not
new Mark.
A new Mark. No, not new Mark. Alesis. There is a new Mark bass head that is not much bigger than a kind of like airport paperback. That sounded really good when we heard it. And Joe Branton, we know it's not to your taste.
No, I'm just saying, I think Class D has its limitations. And
yeah.
I think it would be fine. There would be no problem if Class D wasn't a sacrifice. But if you're actually saying, I'm going to choose lightweight over tone, which is what Class D means.
Absolutely
by definition,
not.
You are choosing
Absolutely
something
not.
That weighs less.
It sounds
at the sacrifice
different.
Of sound.
It sounds different.
It sounds choked.
No, not always. Not always. Cheap ones do, I agree, which is why I still fight the corner for Mark Bass, because they're not super cheap and they are very good.
Right. Okay.
We went to
great name.
We went to try the Tech 21 head and a few weeks ago, and as soon as we plugged it in, the fuse went.
Oh, yeah. Really?
So we didn't get to try it.
Also,
which is just what it's, I mean, yeah, it's just something that happens. Happen, you know, yeah. It was an unfortunate.
They make incredibly reliable pedals, I am pretty satisfied that their heads are going to be.
I mean, I don't. After working in a guitar shop for 7 years, I don't think I ever saw a sound amp come back.
And
ever.
We must have sold one a day.
Oh, at least, yeah. And they're such top notch stuff.
Also, only speak on out and only speak on in on the cab, which for me is kind of a deal breaker, because if you're buying like a portable head, you kind of got to think that some of the time, or a lot of the people buying those portable heads will be cab sharing.
Mate, it's more common than you think, actually.
Yeah, but just put a combination jack on it.
No, orange aren't combination jacks.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Yeah, I know, but it's not a problem, because when I used to own my orange Terabase, I just had a speak onto jack cable, because that got me out of every situation.
Yeah, but they get lost. They always get lost.
What's the rationale behind it? Does speak on sound better, or
it carries low frequencies better than speaker cables?
Right,
I'm not 100% convinced by that. I think there might be a snake oil element.
Most bass manufacturers have been convinced by it.
Fine, but yes, there is that locking element, which I think is super important. It's a cool thing, but as long as people put combinations on there, you know, put the jack in the center of the speaker on, I think works really well.
But basically, I mean, Sans Amp and Dark Glass are both trying to make products that sound like Ampegs. Ampegs are actually good sounding amps as opposed to Mark Bass.
Yep.
And so anything that's trying to sound like a good amp is surely going to be a better bet. So Sans Amp or Dark Glass is my suggestion.
Okay. What's the, completely the name of the manufacturer has gone out of my head, the other brand that make really small heads, silver face cabs.
PV. What? Silver face cabs?
PV.
Yeah. They're an American based brand. You stock them at GAC. They're real small. They also make preamps as well.
What are you talking about?
There's another brand.
Are you playing with me? Oh, Galien and Krieger?
No.
I don't know.
Warwick?
There's another one. I'm not quizzing you. I just genuinely can't remember what they're called.
PV and Warwick have both released really good lightweight heads this year.
Not those. They're like, they're small production, built in the USA. They also make preamps that you can put inside your bass, like
Aguila.
That may also be, if you're looking for kind of
really
authentic
good,
rock tones on it in a small.
They are. Yeah, I always forget about those. They are some of the best sounding sort of small amps.
Yeah,
definitely. Really good. Quite expensive. Like, heads are a really reasonable price. Like, you can pick up a 300 watt one for less than £500.
Yeah,
but the cabs are ridiculously expensive, like $899 for a 212.
Yeah,
they're
nice
money.
Though. They are really dinky.
No,
they're
not,
sound good.
Because the cabs are neodymium, and again, the definition of neodymium is
you're crazy
sacrificing tone for lightweight.
No, yes, that's great.
No gig's that good that then you need to not have.
Yeah, I mean, both the people watching your band, like, they're not going to be that bothered.
When you're playing in the Dog and Duck in Colchester, I'd rather save my back. Let's take one more question from YouTube and then let's call this a night.
I've been too. Let's do another.
We can do these in the Patreon, and we can't do the YouTube questions in the Patreon.
But he's got to find one.
I've got to find one.
You should be storing these up.
We've got time for two.
I didn't think you were coming back with me.
Yeah, but I want to do this in the Patreon.
Well, we do. One or
okay,
two.
Fine. Toby says, hi guys, anyone got any experience with Laney Lionheart amps? I'm seriously considering the L5 Studio as a quality, low watt, 5 watt amp that I can crank at home. Anything else I should consider? The PV Classic 20 can attenuate down to 5 and 1 watt, and it's a similar price, so it would be an alternative. Expert nerdy advice would be much appreciated.
Oh, it's such a hard question, because they're both so many really, options. Really good.
Matt Knight, and you're not allowed to say Roland or Boss.
No, just say out of those
you're
two.
Say you're not allowed to say Honey Boy, and I was like, oh, well, you could spend the same amount of money.
You could, but you can't crank it. That would be the problem.
Yeah. I sort of like the new Classic 20s. They are good amps, but I definitely think the Laney L5 has got a little bit more of a kind of classier character to it.
Yep.
It just kind of, I mean, it looks cooler, in my opinion. I mean, amazing value for money. And I just think, sound-wise, yeah, it's just got more of that kind of, like, vintage, like, small amp feel. The Classic 20's nice, but it kind of can feel, to me, sometimes a little bit sterile. Like, if I was going to go for a PV Classic series, I'd much rather have one of the older 30 combos.
Yeah, but
they just...
Yeah.
There's
they
no
just sound awesome.
The classic There's 50. No attenuation or anything in the no. 30s, is there? They're just old
that's
school.
That's what I mean. That's why, for me, that's why I'd go for the L5, because the L5 kind of has a great vibe about it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think the attenuation's nice. The only thing I would say on those little ones, sometimes when you attenuate them, they can sound a bit overly compressed. And you're actually probably better off running it at kind of like the 5 watt and kind of doing your best to record what you can.
Yeah.
Because sometimes if you get them down to like half a watt or a quarter of a watt, I'm not sure what they could go down to, they just sound a bit too flubby, I think.
I think it's really interesting how the Lionheart series kind of hasn't carried through to the same level that like the Ironheart series has been so successful. One of the things that I noticed on this question in the forum was who was it who asked it again?
This was Toby.
Toby said, I've been looking at the Lionheart L5 and everyone went, oh yeah, the Ironheart series is great. Yeah, you should. Yeah, the Ironheart series is really, like, really good.
Oh, I love the Ironheart.
And I think a lot of people thought that it was maybe a typo.
Yeah.
Because that it is strange that they made two series that sound so similar with the Lionheart and the Ironheart. But the Ironheart has been so successful over the last few years, and like
audience.
Absolutely, it is. And you know that Lionheart I thought was great, and I think they really. Because those initially were being built in Birmingham. They were being built in the
Headstock
factory. Headstock are Laney and Ibanez and Zild.
Ibanez in the representatives in the UK.
They're the distributor in the UK, and they were building the Lionhearts there. And we went about 3 years ago,
yeah, something like that,
and we just saw them all on test. It was amazing, really, really cool. And they announced shortly after that they were moving, shifting production of those from Birmingham to China, which of course is where the Ironhearts are built. And nobody cares about the fact that they're being built in China. I mean, most amps are being built in China,
yeah,
and nobody really cares about it. But I think it's the fact that they have been being built in the UK.
Well,
and
they were called Lionhearts.
Well, yeah,
they
of were course. Sort of, yeah.
Everything about them was, these are our British amps.
But they didn't sound any different.
Well, they did, because they didn't have the same speaker in. That was my problem.
Right.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, no, you're
the
right.
Chinese ones had a really cheap like speaker in them. The English ones had a proper Celestion in them.
Right.
And it made a huge difference. And the reason I remember that is because I had a customer way back a few years ago who returned one because he said it's not got the same speaker in, and when he looked in the back it said made in China.
Right. No, this is a story
and
I remember
not
now.
Made in the UK.
Right.
Yeah. I've messed that one up. But
any other suggestions? I know that you often champion Blackstar for this question.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm not sure if Blackstar is particularly the right place for that sound.
Both of these are classic amplifier suggestions, yeah. And so I don't think Blackstar
I don't
really
think
has a place there.
I mean, in general, and actually that brings us on to a question on here. So I can't see where it's on YouTube that someone's asked about the best sub 20 watt amp for versatility. And I think if you're going down that route, then yes, Blackstar. I think that they do Blackstar or one of the new Roland amps possibly,
yeah,
are very good for something that's versatile. Whether you would get, I don't know, like that sort of low wattage classic sounding amp, I think is very difficult at the moment. I think it's really weird territory. Like Fender don't really do anything that's that good at that watt, at that low wattage.
What about the bass breakers?
Yeah, the 7. Yeah, I've still not tried the 7.
Very good, not versatile, but
very good. Do you know
what
I was
going
to suggest? Yeah. If you wanted something like kind of really vintage, low-powered, that looks cool and has got kind of, you know, like I said earlier with, say, like the Honey Boy, it's like plug and play, you don't really use a lot of pedals, but it's a great sound. Vox AC4 Hamwide.
Oh, mate. Quality.
Like the mini AC4. I mean, yeah, obviously that's a little bit more on the pricey side. I think they're about $650-$700.
The hand wired one,
that's normally my answer to everything.
Four watts. And I mean, I think I'll say it again, the problem with attenuating anything less than 4 watts is they sound like bad.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the time. If an amp's been specifically designed, like the old ZVEX Nano Head was 1 watt, and I think if it's designed to be 1 watt, it's optimized for that particular sound. But a lot of the time, if you're attenuating with those, because they attenuate like the power amp section, so they actually change the like the valve bass effectively, or how many valves are working, the circuit's just kind of being starved, so it doesn't sound very good.
Yeah.
Rather than being like speaker attenuation, where at least all you're doing is soaking up some of the power. Usually those tend to be like power amp attenuation, as far as I'm aware, and that's where they start to sound a bit flubby and a bit awful. But the AC, the ham wire doesn't have that. It is just 4 watts, but it's got a proper Celestian greenback in it. And then you've just got the hot and cool switch. One just gives you a little bit of a boost, gives you a little bit more drive.
So we're saying for something low-powered, vintagey sounding, the Lionhearts would be a good option, but also check out the Vox AC4 as well.
Big money, but also they do the...
AC10?
Well, I mean, there's also the standard AC4, the non-ham wired one.
Yeah.
They're like £250 or something like that. And they sound really good as well. You just got to be careful because they also do two smaller AC4s, which is the AC4 TV and the AC4 TV Mini.
And they're like... not great sounding.
They're not. They're fine. They're not great sounding. The standard AC4 and the ham-wired AC4 are flawless amps at the price.
Beautiful. And with that, we are well over an hour, so we should probably wrap this up. Thanks if you've been watching on YouTube. If you want to join us every week, you can. Monday nights from 8 p.m. UK time on youtube.com/guitar nerds videos. We're actually going to go and record some more audio for our Patreon backers. If you go to patreon.com/guitar nerds, which you can see at the bottom of the stream here if you're watching this video, either live or in the future, you can go to patreon.com/guitar nerds to support everything we're doing, you know, support the videos that we do, but also support the podcast from as little as $1 a month if you just want some good to throw some goodwill our way. But from $5 a month gets you an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds audio content every week. And from $10 a month, you become one of our executive backers, like these people have.
Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Steve Merkel, Blair Toms, Carlos Manta, Andrew Marco, Mark Cross, JD Short, David Carroll, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Jack Catford, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Will Thompson, Laurie Anstis, Will Gravett, Conan Anderson.
Was that one breath?
Yes.
Impressive.
Thank you.
I didn't think you were going to do it.
No, I just made it.
I thought you would.
I can normally make it
halfway through. It's good.
But I can talk breathing
whoever
in as
Brad
well.
Is,
I could have done
I hope
the other way.
He doesn't mind being called Brad Pitt every week.
Yeah.
Did you call him Brad Pitt this week?
No. No, I said Brad Page, actually. Okay.
Yes.
Page it.
Sure he did. Brad Page, I think, has messaged to say that he's fine with occasionally being called Brad Pitt. But if you're not Brad, do let us know. Best place to do that, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. That's where all our podcast listeners, YouTube viewers and stuff hang out. Go over there, start a conversation, send us questions for the podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter @GuitarNerds, Instagram @GuitarNerds, where we're putting up loads of awesome pictures of all the gear that we filmed at the weekend. Joe apparently is now sponsored by Marshall Beer, so go and check out Marshall Beers. And you can follow us individually @Mark_Random, @Matt_Nightsy, @JAYBN1, and @Joseph_900. Thanks very much for listening this week, and we'll see you next time.
Farewell,
bye-bye.
Everyone. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Be well on your...
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.